podcast from Kunstraum Niederösterreich. Hello and welcome to another episode of our podcast series Im Kunstraum. My name is Friederike Sperling and I'm the artistic director at Kunstraum Niederösterreich. The conversation that's about to begin features this year's winner of the H13 Lower Austria Prize for Performance, Katharina Ernst, and MUDAM curator Clémentine Proby. The artist talk took place in the framework of our symposium Performance Besides Itself, Infra and Parastructures of a Contemporary Liveness earlier in December, which in turn was situated in Katharina's winning H13 performance and exhibition project Metrics. Katharina Ernst is an artist and drummer who studied abstract painting at the Academy of Fine Arts in Vienna, and she started playing the drums at age 9 with an early focus on polymetrics, complex and chaotic structures at the intersection of music, fine arts and choreography. In recent years, she has realized collaborative projects together with Florentina Holzinger, the Black Page Orchestra and Kate McIntosh. Her performances, compositions, and artworks have received international recognition at venues including Ars Electronica, Burgtheater, Center for Digital Cultures and Technology in Brussels, Künstenfestival des Arts, Pakt Zollverein, Schinkel Pavilion, Sophienseele, Tanzquartier Wien, Wiener Festwochen and ZKM. Clémentine Proby is a curator and writer. In her practice, she notably focuses on the social uses of space and their relation with exhibition making, trying to go beyond traditional exhibition formats. She currently works as assistant curator at MUDAM Luxembourg, where she has conceived public programs, commissioned performances to artists such as Motoko Ishibashi and James Richards and Billy Bultheel, and curated exhibitions such as Cosima von Bonin, Songs for Gay Dogs, After Laughter Comes Tears, and the experimental artist residency, The Collective Laboratory. Without further ado, I'll leave the stage to Katharina and Clémentine, so enjoy their talk and see you back in 2025.
So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about the three movements that we saw in the video and that I think are not necessarily obvious to someone who doesn't play music or who's not a musician. And if you could just very simply explain how you conceived those three moments.
The musical layer of this work is a composition in three parts, as you just said. And the whole composition is actually staging different types of polyrhythms. And the polyrhythm is a complex, a meeting of different rhythms. And that is actually becoming complex because they are different, not because every rhythm is so complex in itself. It's more the combination of many things that are not the same. And in the first part, I made a setting that so that chaotic polyrhythms can appear. And it's actually a quite simple setting. So we are all playing musical shakers of different shapes and sizes and therefore tunings. And the musical score is, we play accelerations and decelerations, so accelerando and decelerando on top of each other, so that there is no tempo ever meets. They are always overlapping and diverging. And then in the second part, I did a transition to organized polyrhythm, which in this case means that it's groovy polyrhythm, where whole numbers, like 3, for example, overlap 4, so that there's a predictable polyrhythm going on that repeats itself, and it's a rhythmical, in the smaller sense, a rhythmical
cellule
that repeats itself. And then in the last part, there is another layer coming from the speakers, because the first two parts were entirely acoustic. And in the third part, there is another layer from the, like a playback track, that is also made of shaker sounds and a bass sound that came from a sub that is hidden in this element here. And yeah,
this is a juicy detail for me because I told nobody, only today.
And so the idea is that it opens up another space, like there's another layer of associative space.
Okay, and so I think you think of polyrhythm also as a metaphor for like structures in society and how they interfere, how they can be in harmony or not. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about this too.
Yeah, so I actually find it quite obvious, or it's like a natural to work with rhythm as a model for other things, or to as an abstraction of relations in real life. And I find polyrhythm is an extremely cool and simple metaphor for things that happen at the same time and are not the same, which can be understood either on an individual level or also on a collective level, on a society level, on any kind of dimension of the human existence, basically. And of course, not only the human existence, but in this metric setting, it's about architecture and geometry and mathematics a little bit. So it's more, centered around the human experience. And also, I'm a human, so in any case.
Because actually, coming back to the title of the installation and the performance, the whole work, the whole exhibition, you're also talking about metrics and measurements, or like standards of measurements that we think of as evident, as you know, it's so anchored in our daily life that we perceive them as like something, like a tool, like purely a tool. But what you're also, I think, touching upon is that these standards are not neutral. I was wondering how, like, also the, because you talked about the architecture, how you were talking also about architecture and how this abstract composition that we are very much in allow you to like talk about this, like how does it transmit this idea? And
so for metrics, for this work, I work with the shape of the ground of this space, and I try to imagine another configuration of this, of these measurements, of these proportions. Which is in any way, I think, one of the centers of my work, like to think and rethink spaces and to question the spacings that are available and probably modify them or transform them. And so in this case, the black shapes that you can see, they are a cut-up of the ground, the floor plan, yes. And again, it's at the same time it's playing with the very shape of where we are in the literal way, but also always there's a meta level that we can question our, like, the space that is available to us, like, how do we perceive it, also in, you know, in connection to the panel before, like, where are we, and what are the conditions of the space, and what probably, like, what implications does it have, and how can we actually neither just accept them or ignore them, but actually make it ours or transform the conditions with respect. Mm.
And you work a lot with abstraction. I think you also come from a background of abstract painting, and I think you're still painting a lot. You're still active in that, and I was wondering how, in what way abstraction kind of allows you to talk about these, you know, these things, like how space is used, and like why abstract, like why making it abstract. Mm.
I have the feeling that the greater the level of abstraction, the more, like, the bigger the possibility to reflect yourself in it. So it leaves more space for a spectator or an audience of any kind to find themselves inside the work, kind of. And also it allows me to think, like the dimension of the abstract is a way of kind of dismantling a lot of layers to pierce through the core of what I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. And I often find that my work is not at all about combining things, but more, it's like more archaeology. You know, you dig and then you take off another layer, or maybe also sculpturing, like stone sculpturing, mm-hmm. or something. You take off layer after layer until finally there is some kind of shape, you know, that you find, and then you dig even deeper, and then somehow, yeah, mm. the forms, they just also, yeah, kind of, they show themselves after time.
And how much does your process, because you have a very, you will have a glimpse in the small room over there of Katharina's process while working on a project. It's really fascinating. It's very old school also. You make models. It's beautiful. It's very precise also. You make beautiful drawings. I was wondering what role does it play in this? Like, I guess one experiment leads to the other. Can you explain a bit how you work? And
yeah, it's old school. It means it's physical. Yeah. I want to highlight that, because yes, I'm fine with old school. It's just that I want to add that it means it is physical. It's a physical project, a process of cutting paper mm-hmm. by hand and making drawings with a pencil on paper. It's actually I would say almost the only, but I could also say it's the best way for me to be able to think by drawing, actually, and writing by hand. This is a kind of, because this process of drawing and writing by hand and touching paper and materials and being in a space, it brings a certain kind of timing to the process, and my work actually needs this time also to unfold somehow. I cannot, I'm not so often, I'm not only bringing something to a space and occupy it with what I bring, but I try to actually to also kind of listen to the space already as a basis for what I'm going to do there. And for listening, you need some kind of time span. And also, I'm sometimes sharing my studios with other people, and often also with other painters, for example. And I work in very different kinds of studios, sometimes sound studios, sometimes, yeah, more fine arts. And when I'm sharing my studio with other painters, often they like to listen to music while they paint. And always when I come in, I say, can you please turn off the music? Because otherwise I can't hear what's, like, I can't hear my work. Yeah, somehow, yeah. I can't hear it otherwise. Mm.
But, and yet you very much have a multidisciplinary practice. You are a musician and you are also an artist, and you're not an artist who plays music or who experiments with music, but you're really both, like a musician and an artist. And then you also combine those different aspects of your practice, like here. And could you tell us how that works? Like, I mean, you said a little bit, but what does it bring, basically, to bring those disciplines together, make them dialogue? And also, have you always worked like this?
So, first thing is, for me, I actually never have the feeling that I combine things, because for me, they are not separate from each other. They are just like, I don't know, it's also related to the discussion that you had before, like with the different infrastructures or the different spaces, like museum compared to theater, like what do they have, what can they do. I think there is I think a little bit of that, like the process of making something is kind of an infinite possibility room. Mm-hmm. But then the output is super limited, because you can make a book or an exhibition or a record, or like the forms are somehow, compared to the process, they are somehow limited. But for me, it doesn't mean that they are separate. Mm. And like for my practice, it's my approach that produces sometimes a painting or sometimes a musical composition, and sometimes, you know, I have the feeling that I want to kind of translate something. Mm-hmm. And how can I find the best way to like the best form, like how could I actually bring that out? Can it be with paint, does it have to be a sound, or does it have to be both, or is it just a movement, or would I have to write a book? You know, it could be something that I don't know how to do also. So those ideas, there's a pile of them in my sketchbooks. But it's more like there's somehow the work somewhere, and then it finds its way. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, maybe I could come through this door, you know. Mm-hmm. And then also sometimes, and it's not, we're still talking about abstract mm-hmm. ideas. So it's not really concrete. It's concrete, but it's abstract. Mm-hmm.
And last time you told me that you talked about coloring in music. Yeah. And I thought it was perfect to also understand this process of working with different disciplines, but in a very, as you were saying, like it's not like separated. It's like one artistic practice and like a different translation of an idea. Can you explain what coloring is?
No, we had when we met in Berlin. I was talking about the musical score and about the different roles of the three performers and how it would be, you know, like which part would be played by whom, and there are different positions inside the polyrhythmic score. And I said that in music you can say coloratur, which means that it's a classical music. You have the coloratur, that means that there is the melody that is written, but you have the freedom of playing a little bit like a little arabesque. Yes, exactly. So, and it's a musical term, coloratur, and I don't know what it is in English. If it's there is a word for that, I suppose, or maybe in Italian at least.
coloratura.
And I mentioned that because there is in this super post-minimalist, like accelerando, decelerando, and then the very metronomic order, and then the overall immersion. There is still space for improvisation and highlighting certain accents and certain pulses inside the polymetric groove. And the performer Hee Jin Nam, who did the performance together with me and David Steikert on the 22nd, she had the part, the musical part of doing this coloratura or this highlighting of different pulses and actually accentuating on certain parts that she decided spontaneously.
So she did have a bit of agency within the performance. It was the performance is not completely scripted.
It's not completely scripted. It is actually the settings are scripted. It's not script. It's not like a musical score where you have the bar lines running and you need to actually fetch every note. It's more like, okay, in the first part we do the chaotic polyrhythms that only happen in this and that way. Like the framework is quite clear and simple, but then inside it's floating and it's improvised until a certain degree. So we were actually walking the lines that would later actually lead to the cutoffs. So you can also relate that to the drawings and the model that is inside. So there are certain lines that I imagined would actually make another space if we were constantly walking them. Mm. Like, you know, when you have some park, like a little park, and there's grass, a lawn, and you walk, like people decide to walk in a certain way, then there, after a while there will be a path, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is the same idea here. So I decided for a certain axis, and then we were walking them and playing these overlappings. But for example, the movement layer and the sound layer, they were also interdependent from each other. They were not linked together. I didn't say you have to start in the corner and you play until the next corner. You start walking in the corner and you walk your way, but you play wherever it happens. So I'm very much interested also in this the idea of interdependence, which means that things are at the same time independent and dependent from each other. So they are actually connected through the act of listening and through the act of embodiment. And they are not, it doesn't mean that things have to happen in a certain way and that things are glued together.
And actually that was also what I wanted to talk about now is this idea of listening, which is central to this piece and to this performance, because you have to, I mean, in music in general, of course, but in this performance, everything is based on listening to your fellow performers. So can you tell us about this?
Yeah, I put the act of listening as a center piece or center part into this setting. Also because I think that it is something that is desperately needed more. On an individual level, on a collective level, on an environmental level, listening is crucial. And as for metrics, it's like the thread that goes through the piece and that's also somehow holding everything together. Because if we're not listening to each other, then everybody's just doing something in their corner. And it is something completely different to do your thing and listen, or to do your thing without listening. And it's so it's invisible. This is why it is so difficult for people sometimes to kind of commit to it, or to actually acknowledge that there is a huge difference between the two. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to put emphasis on the act of listening, because I think in every political and however in every way it's so important. And I just want to do a small link to because it's a very actual development in Berlin. I don't know how you followed the news, but there were huge cut-ups in the cultural budget announced just last week, and Joanna Malwitz, the director, the artistic director of Konzerthaus in Berlin, she did such a wonderful speech in front of the audience who came to listen to a concert a couple of days ago. You should actually, I highly recommend to listen to her speech on YouTube. It's only 8 minutes, it won't take you long, but it's really like it's putting the things really where they belong. And she said, like in times, like in our times, nothing is more needed than listening to each other, and also the experience of listening to something together and not as a single person, but to be in a space together with other people and listen. And I was thinking that before already, but I think it's really such a, it's so, I don't know if you say that in English, exemplary, that they try to take all these things away, and it's exactly the wrong idea. They're like, we can't master all the challenges without the act of listening, and also, yeah, the openness to also listen to things that you don't agree with, because this is another misunderstanding that is very en vogue, that listening is already agreeing. No, you can listen to somebody and you don't agree with that person. And it's so important. This is the opposite of cancel culture. Sometimes you have to say stop, this is not possible, but not always, you know. Yeah.
And it requires an effort. Like, yes, you were saying, the act of listening, it's an action. It's not
passive.
It's not passive. And I think that's also very linked to listening when you don't agree with someone. You have to make an effort. It's something that is sometimes like you have to pay attention, but also necessary. And I was thinking that maybe we could open the floor to the audience if you have any questions.
What was the speech and where do I find it on YouTube?
Joanna Malkovich.
Sorry. Thank you.
She's the chief conductor and artistic director of Konzerthaus Berlin.
Joanna Malkovich.
Malkovich, yeah, sorry. I was also thinking Malkovich is an actor. Malkovich, but I said it before, I said it correctly, no? I hope. Oh my god. I'm a bit tired.
Yeah, you've had a long week.
Yes, kind of.
I have another. I was wondering, you already touched upon the significance of having multiple perspectives in the show, but I was wondering if you could quickly elaborate also on the very visuality of visualization of these perspectives, like in the body of these geometric shapes, and what that means also for your conceptual, your idea, your relationship with the spectator, with the audience.
Thank you for this question. So the relation between the shapes and the space is already the cut-up, as I said before. But then they just, like now when you just see them like that, they're floating shapes. But there are certain points in space where those shapes connect to each other from a certain angle, or you will actually find a point in space where this shape looks like a triangle, but when you walk 3 steps to the other side, it's suddenly, it has 4 corners. So this whole concept is at once a kind of invitation also to change your perspective and to move, to see probably connections that you haven't seen before, or also to leave your point of view where you can see the connection and leave that one and for another perspective on the same setting. And also inside the performance, they were landmarks for certain performative positions and time spans. Like, for example, in one of these spots, there would be the beginning of the metronomic part, because it's also about, also on the musical level, about finding and leaving connections. And of making of the same material, making different things, and making up different things also, because we as humans, we always try to orient ourselves, and we only have what we have, and this is like just playing with the thought of orientation and the courage to also leave something that you found, because you don't have to keep everything. You can also keep it in mind, and you don't need to be somehow Fiji
still
fixated in a position. Yeah.
So two points. So I did yesterday a kind of test. About how you perceive space and your intelligence in space. There are some, and this was also with different geometrical forms, but it was also with patterns, to bring these patterns into a relation and in this kind of situation that you have to continue by yourself, which kind of pattern you would aid, which was quite interesting, because it was also on a very abstract level. And on the other side, for sure, for me, it would be, you also asked for that, this kind of how to involve the people into it, So, because, so also when you work with, one question would be also how you make also for you some tests in that case, when you take the shapes of the space, so, because it's still for the audience a challenge also to come into it, that it is in this kind of relation to the space, because first impression is it's abstract forms. So it maybe in that case would be interesting, but I think it's for the Kunstraum not really to also to work with the floor and so to bring the whole space in another situation. So. And in fact, it would be interesting for me if you also consider it sometimes to make a kind of playful, so that you challenge the audience, so for example, to bring it on a raise or to in a special position and then changing the position and also then to come into your own movements. It's not like that it's interactive in that case, that everything is already structured and you as just in the interaction, but also to go further. So if you make also some experiments with this kind of methods, so and if you already did it in this case, and how is the music, you have another situation, there's the music here also. Okay,
Yeah, thank you. So maybe it's important to say that now we are having this symposium and the talk and everything, but when the exhibition is running, there is a 7-channel audio installation going on with the musical score as described. So the live part, of course, is then also played from the speakers. And what you just said is exactly what I tried to do here, like to make a space that allows people to experiment themselves. So probably we didn't talk yet about the role of the audience or the spectators inside the performance, but I actually picture like if you imagine like three, there are a lot of triangles here, and you think of the performers, three performers move around the space making sound. It's also a triangle that changes shape constantly. And then there are the spectators all around in space, in this space, and they're listening to each of these sounds moving around. And this is another net. It's like also a net of, it's another layer, an invisible layer of the performance that that is also a shape, if you want to see it like that. So it's a moving shape.
And during the performance, people walk around. That's like,
yes, if they decide, they did a little bit. It was quite full. This also changes, of course, the whole perception. If you're alone here, then you are probably more, you're more interested maybe in experimenting with the shapes, mm-hmm. because you can see them better and the axis in space, but.
But also with sound, depending on where you are, yes. Sound, it changes.
Yes, exactly, and also, like, the last part of the performance is also, we as performers only listen in the end. We only listen to what comes from the speakers. It's like also this meta layer of sound that is not produced by bodies that are present here. But it's like the associative space of something that we can't control, that we can't reach. And then they are positioned in space. Mm-hmm. So they are kind of places, like the sound in the speakers becomes a kind of place. Mm-hmm. And this is also an invitation. You could be drawn to a speaker to listen to this particular sound. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so because before we also discussed this here, that it is more and more important to bring the communities into spaces, yeah, but it would be also just to about this kind of community outreach, yeah, but I think it's really important to go outside to other places, so and you are also going to other places, to other, because also Amanda also said, yeah, this kind of how, let's say, this how you make another kind of encryption into places, into spaces, and for sure, and how you are inspired by this sound, which is this sound, yeah? Are you inspired also from special environments, which, because you are, is it very sensitive about listening, so maybe you already mentioned it, sorry if I have not, about how you are inspired with this kind of sound. You come here to the space and you listen to the space, yeah, because, or...
I don't know, it depends actually. When I do musical compositions, they are sometimes kind of independent of where they will be. But I think that probably, this was also a thought that came up at the discussion that you had before. I think that when you make a work of art, you can think until different degrees of the work, or different, how can I say that? Like, you can either think of your painting that it stops at the border of the canvas, or you can think of the wall that will be, that it will be hanging on, like, okay, maybe it has a color or not. Then you can think of probably the wall is far away and you're not allowed to. So I think that I often think a lot of the context with what I do. So if I compose something, I immediately think of in which space it could be. For example, only like I did a solo for drums that is like a performative solo that is essentially conceived for spaces that have natural reverb, because it is acoustic and not amplified by electronics but by architecture, for example. Or with this space, it's quite literal, because I really literally did what I already explained. But yeah, to answer your question, I'm very much going to very different places, and I'm a kind of I love the hybrid, and also I love to think in all those. Like I like actually to get to know all the potential and the pouvoir of the different spaces. What can they do for me or for the work, and then kind of dance with that. So if there is no douche, then there is no douche. When it snows outside in December and you're performing outside, then you know it will be cold, you know, for example.
Yeah. So you are like Muhammad Ali, who was also a dancer in boxing, so you are dancing in the space.
That's a fancy link. Nobody told me that yet. Up to the audience to say that.
Okay, thank you.